Good evening. Good evening.
Good evening. Malcolm.
Malcolm, you're the first one, so we're going to give it a couple of more minutes, unless you want to start now. Are you doing well, Malcolm?
Yes, thank you. Doing fine. How about you? Okay.
We are, this is a deeper Zohar class for the Parsha of Noach on the Sulam commentary of the Zohar. We're starting with Pasuk 213, and I'll actually start with the Lashem Yehud. Lashem Yehud Kud Shabarichu Ishkinte Bidchilu Urchimu Udchilu. Uchilu urchinu. Leakta l'shem yudhe bovavhe. V'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah. La'asok Torah mitzvah. V'ayhino amadunai Eloheinu aleinu ma'asei adenu kanunei aleinu ma'asei adenu kanuneihu. V'ayi yizkor Elohim et Noach ve'et kol hachaya. Ve'et kol ha'ba'ahama heima asher ito b'teva rabbi chiyayo b'tacharum ra'a v'nista ay kira itmar al noach di'al V'tevuta v'istatar ba v'yal l'goy Tevuta v'zimna v'mayayom v'haku le'ya v'ha'itmar v'yad la'al l'tevuta kama le'ya L'malach ha'mavet V'azil ben ayhu V'yaz tachar Lon kevan d'chama Le'ya alet la'teva V'istatar b'gya'eva Ahidiktiv arum ra'a Ra'a v'nistar, ra'a, ra'a, da malach ha'mavet, v'nistar, v'kameya, ahidiktiv mifnei me, ha'mebul. And Elohim remembered Noah and every living thing and all the cattle that were with him in the ark. Rabbi Chiya quoted the verse, a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, saying that this verse refers to Noah, who entered the ark and hid himself in it, and he entered the ark only when the waters forced him to do so, as was previously explained. Before he went into the ark, he saw the angel of death walking among the people and encircling them. Because Noah saw the angel of death, he entered the ark and he hid. Thus it is written, a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself. Foresees evil refers to the angel of death, from whom he hid, as it is written, from the waters of the flood, or in other words, from the angel of death, whom he saw on the waters of the flood. Welcome, Ruby. We're in section 29 of the Sulam commentary on the Parasha of Noah. And we've just finished reading 2:13.
Okay.
So are there any questions or comments or thoughts? Everything in this pasuk we have heard in different pasuks in the last three sections. And yet this time it's all being presented fully in one pasuk. But there is one difference that is very significant. What is the name of God that was used in bringing the flood? In case you don't know, it was Hashem. Go ahead, Malka.
Oh, it wasn't me.
No. It was Brandela.
I apologize. Didn't recognize your voice.
Okay.
So go ahead, Brenda.
No, I was going to say Hashem. Or Elohim.
And you are correct. You are correct. We've discussed that repeatedly. Hashem is the one, the name, that was the level of consciousness that brought the flood. Here it's saying, and Elohim remembered Noah. Why is it using the name Elohim, which is a lower level than the name Hashem? That question will be answered in this verse, but go ahead.
I was going to say, maybe because Elohim has a touch of mercy with it, as well as judgment.
Elohim has mostly judgment with an element of mercy. Hashem has mostly mercy with an element of judgment. And you are absolutely correct, but that's not the reason that the name Elohim is used in this context of what remember means. The word remember is zachor. It's the same letters as male. The answer to the question I have asked isn't in this verse. It will be revealed in the next few verses. I haven't read ahead. I just know the way the Zohar tends to work in presenting things. But if it doesn't answer it, by the end of the section, if someone will remember to ask me, I'll be happy to explain it. But it's a very important question. It's also the reason why all of these different ideas of hiding yourself from negativity, from the angel of death, that the concept of a flood is not just negativity, it is the manifestation of the angel of death. All of these different consciousnesses, all of these different ideas have been presented to us in different pasukim. But here it's presented in one pasuk And we need to get answers to those questions as to why it's being presented in one pasuk. Verse 2:14. Rabbi Yose Amar Arum Ra'a V'Nistar Ahadar Alma Deit Bar Bezimna V'mota Sharya V'alma Bar Nash Kachim Yisatar Vela Yakum Velevar Vela Yitchaze Kame Vecha Bela Begin Dikevan Deit Yahiv Leia Rishu Yechabel Olinun Diestachun Kameya Diavrun Kameya Deit Galiayo Besofa Dikra Uftaim Avru V'ne'enashu Avrin Kameya Deit Chazyan Kameya V'ne'enashu Davar Acher Avru Avru Pekuda Yemarechon V'ne'eshnashu Devar Acher Arum Ra'a Ra'a V'nistar Da Noach Uftaim Avru V'ne'enashu Ilein B'nei Dareya. Rabbi Yossi said that the verse, a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, means, as has been stated, that when death rages throughout the world, a wise man will hide and not appear in the open. This prevents the angel of destruction from seeing him, because when the angel of destruction gets permission to destroy, he destroys everything in front of him and everyone who openly passes before him. An allusion to this appears at the end of the verse that reads, "But the simple pass on and are punished," referring to those who pass in front of him, are seen by him, and therefore punished. Another explanation is that pass on, the Hebrew avru, means that those who transgress, the Hebrew is avru, the mitzvot of their master are therefore punished. According to yet another explanation, a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself, refers to Noah, while the simple pass on and are punished refers to the people of his generation. Questions, comments, thoughts?
I think the ones that conceal themselves are the ones that are have spiritual knowledge of God's of Hashem's word, and that's why they conceal themselves. Where the simple do not have the the knowledge of Hashem's words or Torah.
I'm not sure I quite follow that, Malcolm.
Okay.
The verse essentially reads, a prudent man foresees evil and hides himself. And then it goes on maybe a different verse, or, but it looks like it's the same verse. But the simple pass on and are punished. So it's saying that everybody is going to receive the same effect. Whether they're guilty of doing anything wrong or not, they're going to receive the same effect. That's the implication of the verse. This Zohar is coming and saying, well, let's break the verse down. Who is a prudent man? Someone who hides themselves from the angel of death. Where can you hide yourself from the angel of death? The Zohar tells us that we can hide ourselves in Torah study. We can hide ourselves in the Zohar. This is our ark. How do you enter the ark of the Zohar? Through learning, through study, through scanning. Most people would, in earlier generations, if you said, go ahead and scan the Zohar, they said, no, we can't. We're not eligible to do that. And there are still people saying that today. People who are scanning the Zohar, who are reading the Zohar, who are studying the Zohar, essentially the Zohar in this pasuk is saying, you are the prudent man, the prudent people. The simple people are going to die because they don't hide themselves. They're going about their business while the world is in chaos. Now let's bring that into our own generation. This year we have a number of people who have died through the influenza. Can you hide yourself from influenza? Yes, through the study of Torah, through the study of Zohar. We all know people who have chaos in their life. We even know people who are part of our classes who have caught the flu. So how do I explain that the Zohar is the ark? That all they had to do is study Torah. Well, we have some scientific knowledge that explains that the flu is passed on through sneezing and coughing and so forth. But I tell you, I went to the doctor's office this past week, and the doctor is wearing a mask. Is that hiding himself? The answer is yes. But it's not he who hides himself. I was being hidden from his being able to infect me. How do I explain the people who are studying with me in these classes? I don't want this to be a criticism. I'm using it as a teaching moment. We are taught to pick a specific time to study Torah and to make that not a religious duty, but to make that a pattern of behavior that does not get interrupted. Because who's interrupting you when you're studying Torah? The Satan. He's trying to draw you away. And we all have choices to make about what is important and what is not important. And I can't say that because you get a phone call or because your husband or your wife comes in and interrupts you, that this is not, I'm not judging that. I don't necessarily think it's incorrect. But if you make it your business that this class or that hour or that 10 minutes every day is your pattern, your point where you're going to study Torah, then interruptions during that period are definitely coming from Satan. And that choice needs to be made. Again, I'm not criticizing. I cannot make those judgments for you. Some of those interruptions need to be gone through. But if you do enough of those interruptions, you're creating a hole in your protection shield. Now, does anybody have any questions about what I just said? Because I really want to stress, I'm not judging it. I'm not saying that somebody did something wrong. You have to make those decisions. You need to reach into your intuition and ask yourself before you go to answer a phone or to return your husband or vice answering them as they interrupt you in a Torah class. You have to reach into your intuition and ask yourself, is this the right thing for me to do at this time? And you can always depend on this, which is the more difficult for you to do? To answer them, to be interrupted, is that more difficult than studying Torah or less difficult? If you listen to your inner intuition, if you ask the question, this is your protection shield. So does anybody have any questions? Almost out of time, so we don't have enough time to do the next verse, so feel free to ask those questions. I didn't make it that clear that you can't ask questions.
I have a question.
One at a time, please. Malcolm, why don't you go ahead first and then Brandy.
Oh, I didn't have any questions. I said it's pretty clear to me.
Okay. Brandy, did you have a question?
I do. I have a question about what we've been studying this week about Noah and the Ark and the protection shield.
Okay.
When Noah went into the Ark and he was protected, was he studying Torah the whole time that he was in the Ark?
No, he was doing good deeds, but he carved out of his day and carved out of his night a certain amount of time to study Torah. In other words, we're not expected to study Torah 10 hours a day. And for each of us, it's always relative to those needs of our soul. And many of us, including me, when I started out, I didn't have set times to study Torah. But then I developed a set time. If I had gone to sleep, I would get up at midnight and study for a half hour. And then as I went on, they lengthened that to an hour and then to an hour and a half. I would get up in the morning after morning prayers, and I would have a 15 minutes before I had to rush off to work. But then I got invited out with people in the minyan who wanted to talk to her over coffee. Well, there's their coffee. I don't drink coffee. But over coffee or tea and crumpets, you know, pastries. But then there was, you get to this area where you're stressed. You have your business to run. You have your work to do. And then you have your Torah to study. And can you do both at the same time? A lot of people think that they can. And maybe they can. I'm not arguing that. For each soul, it's relative. But if you don't carve out a minute a day, 5 minutes a day, an hour a day, whatever is right for you at your spiritual development, that period, whatever it is, morning, and it needs to be at night as well, both times a day, you start out with just one, either night or morning, but eventually you get to the point where you do it both times a day. If you allow interruptions, you have to come to terms with that. Is it okay for you to allow interruptions during that period? You know, and I can't say, oh, you must do that, because that's not the way the world works. It's not coercive. But there is consequences. If you're building a protection shield, build the protection shield. Don't leave a hole in it. And that's what this verse, one of the things this verse is explaining. Noah went into the ark because he saw the angel of death. Was he sure that he wasn't going to be affected by the angel of death? God didn't tell him to go into the ark. Earlier in the Torah, it does say God told him to go into the ark. But he didn't go in until he saw the angel of death. How many of us see the angel of death? Every one of us sees the angel of death prior to us dying, God forbid. And if you hide in the ark, if you prevail in the ark, if you create the ark for yourself, you will never need to see the angel of death.
Wow.
But how do I say that? Can I prove it to you? No. It has to be that you come to this understanding through the study of Torah. Because the angel of death is given permission to take people it sees during this year through the mechanism of flu, influenza. How do I know that? Because of the statistics they're publicizing. Didn't people die of influenza last year? Yes, but it wasn't an epidemic. But we are seeing last year, this year, we are seeing epidemics. We are seeing events around the world that are catastrophic. I looked recently for the verse that is next year. Hold on a second. Come in. 1 minute. I looked recently for the verse that would be the same gematria as next year, 5779. Mm-hmm. There is no verse in the Tanakh with that gematria.
That's what I was going to say.
There are
not
three, there are three verses that have the name of the year within them separated by three letters. I don't yet know what the meaning of that there's no verse with that gematria. I know what the number three represents. It represents a tool of the tree of life. It represents right, left, and central. So I know Hashem's mercy is there. But what is the meaning for the world that there is no verse? I don't yet know that answer. But we have a number of months before we need to. But choosing your protection shield and building your protection shield, that is all about your free choice. No one says you have to answer the phone when you're in this class. No one says you have to answer your husband or your wife. You can tell them, this is my period when I will be studying Torah and I can't be interrupted. And yes, it can be uncomfortable. And yes, there are emergencies. But deciding what is the important aspects when you hear an emergency, is that emergency coming from reality that it's truly an emergency? Or is that emergency coming from Satan to pull you away from Torah? Each person has to make those decisions for themselves. I'm just taking this opportunity on this verse to bring it as a teaching moment. Yes, Malka, go ahead.
I do have a question. You stated that the angel of death has the permission to take all that is in front of him.
Correct.
So
all
why
did
it say front? Why not the back? Is that because the back is more protection? It says in front of him.
No. In front of him means there's a whole concept in Kabbalah of face-to-face and back-to-back. Face-to-face means you have greater affinity. Back-to-back means that there's less affinity. It's usually used in the context of Hashem has turned his back, and meaning we are further from Hashem. But it applies to all spiritual entities. So it's telling you if you're in front of the angel of death, you have greater affinity to the negative system at that moment. But if you're in the back-to-back where he doesn't see you, if you're hidden away where he cannot see you, it's no longer connected. There's no affinity there. You're closer to Hashem rather than the angel of death. When he's given permission to destroy on these levels of catastrophe, everybody that he sees, meaning everybody that is face-to-face with him, he has permission to take. Even if that person has never sinned, even if that person is righteous, he has responsibility as a righteous person to have told other people about what's happening. But there's in this generation, it's difficult. It's very difficult to go to your friends and say you're going to live 300 plus years. You know you're going to be laughed at. You know you're going to be embarrassed. How can you do it?
I'm
this
just
is
saying
a decision.
It.
Yeah, but what happens? Are you willing to endure? Are you willing to endure their reaction to you?
Sure.
I say it in this class. I also say it to my children. I also say it to my friends. I also say it to the people in the building.
But you see their reaction. You know, they laugh. My children say, oh, there goes Dad again. He's out there again. You know? It's all part of it. Are you willing to expose yourself to diminish your ego? I know I'm right. How do I prove it to you? I keep telling you, you got to stick around at least 300 more years to prove me right. You all have a good evening. We'll do this again tomorrow at this time.
Okay. Thank you.
Shalom to all.